Welcome to Ready, Set, Practice, Insight for New PAs, the podcast designed to guide you through the transition from PA school to clinical practice. I'm Dr. Jennifer Orozco-Cole, the Chief Medical Officer at the American Academy of Physician Associates. In each episode, we'll explore the many factors that shape your early career, from understanding your roles and responsibilities, to navigating professional challenges, developing personal leadership, and advocating for both your profession and your patients. Join us for expert insights and real-world advice tailored to new PAs stepping into practice. In today's episode, we're diving into one of the biggest transitions in a PA's journey, going from PAS to PAC. You've graduated, but now what? How do you find the right job, navigate credentialing and licensure, understand employment contracts, and set yourself up for success in your first role? To help us break it all down, I'm joined by PA Natalie Crump. Natalie is a dedicated physician associate with a background in women's health and reproductive medicine. She's also a past AAPA Student Academy president and has served on the AAPA Board of Directors. Her experience as a new PA and her passion for mentorship make her the perfect guest to share insights on what to expect after graduation. Natalie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, such a great intro. Thank you. So nice to be here. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the invitation to speak on this. I think it's super important that we provide a roadmap as much as we can.
Well, I'm excited that you're here, and you and I have known each other for some time. So let's start with a quick introduction for our listeners. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your path from PA school to your current role. How has that transition been for you?
Yeah, it's been one for the books, we'll put it that way. But yes, hello, podcast listeners. My name's Natalie. I'm a PAC. I did my training in PA school at Rocky Vista University in Parker, Colorado. But before becoming a PA, I was a researcher in fertility preservation for the University of Colorado. And that's where I say I got bit by the bug to want to practice reproductive medicine. So I used to preserve fertility for cancer patients, male and female, before they embarked on journeys that would otherwise end their fertility earlier than they would have hoped. And then I left that field, decided to go to PA school, and during my didactics was like, who knows if I want to go back to that, we'll see. And then as soon as we did reproductive endocrinology, I was like, yes, so this is home. And so I am married. I went through PA school with three kids. My kids at the time were all like elementary school, middle school, so busy. This is me going through OSCEs and a parent-teacher conference. This is me sitting on sideline games and studying for interpretation exams. Like, it was all out mayhem, but got through it, thankfully, and started transitioning into the workforce by actually having one of my first jobs be created for me, a position at the University of Colorado doing women's health. And that was a very gracious opportunity I had, being able to go back to women's health, but it wasn't REI. It wasn't reproductive endocrinology and infertility just yet. So the transition was swift. It had to be, because I was a working parent. And so I needed to make sure I was able to graduate successfully, pass pants successfully, and then shore up a job. So that way I could be able to be a contributing factor in my household.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're gonna talk more about that journey, specifically being a parent. I can't, you know, I'm a parent. I have a lot of kids. I'm married, but I wasn't during PA school. So navigating that during PA school and then finding a job and all of that transition, you've moved. I mean, you've done so much. So I can't wait to talk about that. Let's back up for just a second though. Tell us a little bit about your job search. What was that like? Like, how do you even begin to start looking for a job?
So I'm like type A plus in personalities, if you had to categorize. And so we graduated from PA school in November, which meant January I started studying for pants, January of that year, even though the exam was November, right? Because you can't take your pants until you graduate. And at that same time is when I started pretty much prioritizing the specialties, right? Because as a PA, we're trained broadly, which is a beautiful thing. And that gives you a lot of leeway to be able to choose the specialty that you desire to work in. I had really great mentors at the time that said, you can either prioritize salary, location, or fit. You can prioritize those three. Sometimes you hit all three and that's, you know, amazing. But sometimes you end up getting two of the three or one of the three. And then you have to figure out kind of what is your line in the sand. And so for me, looking in January, I immediately reached out to people I knew. So I started not on the job market because I feel that you have a better chance sometimes at getting the interview when someone knows you, when you have a direct personal relationship or like a third degree relationship, like you know someone who knows someone who knows someone, or you've rotated with this clinic before. So that's where I initiated the search or kind of dwindling down the specialty. I knew I didn't want to do bones ever. So, like, ortho was never on the list. I knew that pediatrics was pulling at my heart, but unfortunately, from a PA perspective, I needed to make a certain dollar amount. So, again, priority for me was salary in order to support my family. So, peds, I did two rotations in and I loved it, but I just knew that I'd have to do something else to make that make sense for us. So, January, started looking. Reaching out to contacts, do you know anyone who's hiring? Started asking my rotations, my preceptors at the time, because I still had a whole another 6 months or so of rotations to get through. But once I was able to do that, I kind of landed on women's health. And that's kind of where I just, like, at that point, narrowed my focus and very much just only reached out to those providers in that specialty. So I didn't really search for a job on the open market. So I don't have as much experience there, but I do know and can tell you that if I had at the time, which I do now, didn't then a LinkedIn, I would have for sure used that too. I think LinkedIn of the sites you could use to look for jobs. Yes, you could use Indeed. Yes, you can use some of those other sites. And no, I'm not being paid to put their name out there, but you know, but I think if you start, you know, searching and you can see who are your connection points, it's easier that way. I always told students, because I now teach, I like do like a one intro lecture to reproductive medicine for my PA school, and I always tell them the riches are in the experiences of your rotations. Get really comfortable doing well, creating an opportunity to like continue that relationship beyond just through like 4 to 6 weeks that you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think such good advice. And sometimes you said something in there. Sometimes it's helpful to determine what you don't want, and that will lead you down the path of what you do want, right? And there's a lot of students who are going to PA schools in different states. So they're thinking, oh, well, I can't use my preceptor and you know, my rotations because they're in this state and I'm moving back to another. And you know, I think the general you know, consensus is that there's lots of resources. LinkedIn is a great one. AAPA has a huge PA job source board.
And
Every
the salary,
hospital.
the AAPA salary report is very, very helpful when you're trying to
Yeah, let's
navigate,
talk about
negotiate
that for a
that.
second.
So yeah, on salary, it's very interesting because I agreed to go back to school to be a PA because I was already in my career as a researcher. I was fine. I've been in research for 4 years. Like, I was very, very happy. However, I knew I wanted to do more clinically, and I chose to be a PA both for time of training, but also for what our profession offers, which I feel is a very wonderful ability for you to do what you love, but it not consume your life, right? Like, we all want to be very intrinsic in patient care and delivery. We want to use our brains with all the science packed in it, but we don't want to be bombarded or you know, take such a sideline out of life to go after some of the other degrees that take a longer time. But I will say that when you're thinking about salary, using the AAPA salary report, as well as like the Bureau of Labor and Statistics has a report for salary for your specialty, is helpful at navigating the negotiation because your employers are going to look at that also. And sometimes they may not know that other PAs in your specialty make X amount. And here's where they started as a new grad. Like, you can kind of use that to make sure you're at least hitting what I call the basement. Like, don't accept a salary that's going to set us back as a profession. And I like want to stress that. Like, don't let them go in and lowball you. Use your resources, do the research, and present this. And then you add on, and as well, here's my blah, 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 blah. Right? Like, don't be afraid to, at that point, toot your own horn, I like to say. I did that in an academic setting, but in an academic setting, academia is very prescribed, if that makes sense. Like, it's very regimented. There's just, this is how much it pays because this is what sorry for anyways, this is how much it pays because essentially this is what they've allotted for. I knew that going into the first position I had, and so loved it, did really well, had a great time, a great experience. I was able to do exactly what I wanted because I used my network and they created the position exactly the way that I wanted it to. But on salary, it was always a sticking point because I was like, oh, I used all those great stats and I had all that, and they were still like, yeah, so here's where we are. And I was like, okay, grateful, working, employed, not dealing with the gap, and it takes some time to get credentialed. So do figure that into your plan. When you graduate with your PA degree, you take pants, you get board certified. Now you have to get your medical license. Now you have to wait and get DEA. Those are all costs that you have to eat or make a plan for ahead of time. So think of that. But then once I was in the position, really loved it. But when I was, I say poached, that's not the right word. When I was approached to go back to REI, reproductive endocrinology and infertility, I knew at that point I had to make a stance on here's where I'm moving. Like, if you want me, here's where I'm moving with. Like, here's my bottom line. If you can't make it, I'll just stay. Right. I don't want to go with changing a job so soon in my career, which was never my intention. I thought in my head I'd get into women's health, stay general for like a year or two, and then eventually transition to a specialty. But it came up a little bit sooner. So at that point, I like made a decision to advocate for myself. It worked out really well. And I've been with this position going on 3 years in September. So, yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. And we could have a whole podcast just on salary alone and salary negotiation. I think, as you mentioned, knowing your worth is key, but also informing yourself with data. So whether it's the APA salary report or other types of data that are out there, us also understanding your region, your specialty, your state. There's a lot of factors, right? Do I work rural? Am I on call 5 times a month? Like, what are the factors that are into determining salary? And that's, when you first, mentioned in the beginning, you were talking about, what is most important to you? So back up, take a deep breath. I used to tell, so I was director of advanced practice for a very long time. And people always came and said, I want more money, right? Who doesn't? I want more money. But I used to say to people, they'd say that, and then my next question was, are you happy? Do you enjoy what you're doing? And it's so critical. And when I mentor students, and I'm sure you do too, I see people chasing the money train, and they're just miserable in their role. Like, they don't like the specialty, they don't like taking care of their patients. And I encourage students, really calculate out and think about what you want, and I guarantee you the money will show
It will come.
itself down the
It will
line,
come.
whatever it is, but don't go chasing the
The dollar,
dollars. It
100%.
really is about
What you do.
your enjoyment and what you do, right? And us taking care of patients. So
So that it's great that you said that because that was literally my determining factor of should I move from general women's health to reproductive endocrinology. When I was a researcher, I lived to help my patients preserve fertility, and I loved the science, and I was really entrenched in the research, and I missed that when I was in general women's health. So while they approached me, it wasn't a difficult ask. I was like, yeah, of course, I'll come back to fertility. And now that I'm here, like just yesterday was a very busy day for me. My collaborating physician is out of the office, so I'm holding it down solo, and it's just she and I as the two providers in this clinic, but a very busy space. And yesterday, I got to confirm a positive pregnancy for a couple who have been trying for years, like years, that they didn't think they could. And when I was able to do that, and dad is crying and mom is crying, and then two patients before them, I had to do a really difficult procedure, and the patient was so grateful. I felt like I wasn't working. Again, if you can get into a specialty and it not feel like work, you know you've gotten into the right spot. Like, so think about that, I guess, during your rotations. If you're in a rotation and it's like drudgery, you're like, I do not want to get up for this. Like, that's not the one for you. Just exit stage left and don't do that. But if it's the one that, like, for me, keeps me up. I like saw something yesterday. I was like, oh crap, I gotta Google this. Or like, what is the like most recent counseling on this? Or like, how do I work this up? Or like, what do you like? Those are the ones that you want to stay in because as PAs, we're lifelong learners, which is also a really great benefit. But it's fun to learn what you want to learn. Like, you've got to enjoy the aspects of the job. So I think, yeah, first and foremost, do you like it? Step one.
Yes. Do you like it?
You like it?
This is what I want to do. It brings you purpose and meaning for your
Yes.
life, and the rest will follow suit over time.
Yes.
And we could talk about journeys along the way, and there'll be so many things that you experience. And my life went from what I thought I was going to do to how the heck did I end up here, right? Here I am, CMO, and I couldn't have called that in a million years when I first started out as a PA. So you don't know where that journey is going to take you. And all you can do is enjoy what you do, give back, think about why you got into medicine, and that will help guide you. So Natalie, let's talk about a couple of things. And I know, again, we could keep going here, but I want to talk about two things. One, about organization, because there's a lot. It's overwhelming as a new clinician to get your license, and I got to take my boards, and I got to maybe I have to move, I have to get licensed, credentialed, privileged. These are really, it's overwhelming. And so, one, how do you deal with that, and what is your advice? And then I want to talk about your role and kind of stepping into that role when you first get out of school, and now you're this PA, right? And so let's talk about the beginning, which is how the heck do I get organized? And then I want to talk about your role.
You take things out of your head and you put them on a tangible, reliable organization source, such as a note on your computer. I have a note on my phone. It's actually under locked, so you have to use my face to open it, but it says postgrad. And I started this because you have to know, from a licensing perspective, when your licensings are sunsetting and expiring, so you can know when to renew them. So I have on there my in so on this note, both on my computer, as well as like copies of all of my licenses. I have also them on my phone, always handy because you want to make sure that if you're asked of it right away, you can access it. When you're applying for jobs, your most important thing they'll need are your NPI number and if you have a DEA or not, and you need to provide those numbers. And your medical license number. I will say I'm licensed in two states. I got my license in California after being licensed already in Colorado, but they have different dates now too. So I have to put all of that there. I was also licensed for drug license in two different states as well. Keeping them organized is just putting the number, the date that they were issued, and the date that they expire in a handy place where you can access it. I recommend creating a folder on your computer or wherever you access things that literally just says like post grad or all the things that you need. So when you're going for jobs, they're going to ask you for your like patient logs that you did as a PA student, right? So all the times that you had to come back and like chart on your like patients as a PA student, they're going to want to see how many times you were interacting with a patient and did X, Y, and Z. Like when I had to get credentialed at a hospital, you have to provide for them, okay, how many surgeries did you see? How many Pap smears did you perform? How many X, Y, and Z? So in PA school, while you're getting your NPI, which if you don't know, you can get an NPI number as a student. But get your number and then just keep it all in a folder. So I organize everything in folders and I have backups on backups. So I have it on my phone, I have it on laptops, I have it on my iPad, everything crosstalks. And I have calendar reminders of when things sunset and when they're due. I need to actually do it for my AAPA membership because like, apparently it lapsed and
Well,
then I was like,
and I'll tell
what?
you, the other backup is the AAPA for students. And if
Oh,
students know this,
yeah.
they have portfolio.
Your
So
portfolio.
you can put everything in there, automate calendar. There's all kinds of features, but again, whatever works for you.
Do it. So do the portfolio because I think you can also use it and it crosstalks with your NCCPA certification. Like when you're having to log your CMEs, like when I go to conference and I log my CMEs because of portfolio, it automatically knows what I did when I pull up my NCCPA. So yes. I think use the PA portfolio, use your own like physical something so you can have access to your documents, and then it's always readily available when asked for it, but you're never in the dark about what you have, when it's due, where you are in that process. I also created email folders. Again, I'm type A plus. I have email folders of all my correspondences with jobs at that time, with the credentialing departments, with the state medical boards to license to know kind of where things were happening.
So good. And organization is the number one thing because it's a lot. And I'll tell you, it's very easy to get frustrated too, and I'm sure you experience this. They will ask you for the same thing over and over and
Over
over and
again.
over, and in the same organization. You'll say, well, I gave that to HR, and they're like, well, we need it over here in the
We need
medical
it.
staff. So just don't get frustrated. Just realize it's sort of part of the process, and your
Like all your
organization will help.
ACLS. Yeah, your ACLS, your BLS, your PALS, like you need to know when those sunset, keep those in a folder. I had a PA friend, she's a really wonderful RI PA. Her name is Shayna, and she said she has a sunshine folder. And I was like, what is that? And she says, along your journey, you're gonna feel frustrated. Your first 5 years as a PA, you feel like you know what you're doing, but there's a very steep onboarding because we're learning what we need to learn for that specialty. So she had a folder of all the comments or like nice things patients would say or like interactions she had. So she looks at it when things get tough and she's like, oh, I remember. So that's her sunshine folder. So I thought it was really cute. Wanted to share that too.
That. I love that. I need to do that. I need a sunshine folder. Well, let's talk about that role, right? You mentioned that transition, which, I think sometimes when you're a seasoned PA like myself, right, I'm considered a dinosaur now, but you forget what it was
Never.
like, how hard it is. And I think medicine, even from me 20 plus years ago, there was no EHRs. There was nothing, and we thought it was hard back then, but I imagine, and I
It's
know
hard.
it's even harder now with how much medicine has changed in the last 20 plus years. And so tell me a little bit about how did you handle stepping into your new role, and maybe what advice you have for students, because it's such a learning curve.
So let's start with when I was a PA and OBGYN, it was wonderful, great experience. I had an opportunity actually to hold the pager for the residents who were going through the uro-gyn rotation, which is a very heavy rotation for them from surgery. So I was able to assist with answering call for their ER, right? So when they're having gyn consults in the ER. And so honestly, the imposter syndrome is going to be there. And I think the way to combat it is the same way you do any anxiety, you just over prepare. And not to the point where it becomes like pathologic or, I don't want you to exhaust yourself or think you can't do it. But I think what I was able to do was just read everything. It took me forever to prep my notes and chart and all of that, but it's because I want to be so thorough. So I used UpToDate constantly. I asked friends. I had mentors there at that position. It was very, very busy. It was a very steep learning curve to go in and navigate, sometimes high acuity for patients in an obstetric setting, but I was able to do it. I remember having nightmares about the EHR. Like we used Epic, and I remember having a dream that I like messed up a click or didn't do a button, and I was like, this is ridiculous. But the way that you are able to transition is you use all of that great grounding from PA school, all of your like notes that you took for that specialty, the time that you spent with those preceptors, the things that you've known that specialty to be. And if it's a newer specialty for you or something that you did maybe only once, what I did was just took the time to re-educate. I found resources. I joined the professional organizations for that specialty. So I joined ACOG. I joined the AP constituent organization, APAOG, like all the things that I could get my little hands on to make sure that I was supported in any question I may have had clinically. And then from a medical decision making, being in front of patients, you guys do that until you're blue in the face in PA school. So that one isn't as tough. And what I always found really helpful is the vulnerability that I shared. So I would share with patients and my colleagues, I don't know as much about this. Can you teach me? Can you show me? I haven't seen this yet. Can you walk in with the miss? Oh, I like cannot find the cervix. Usually I'm able to. Can you come in and do this with me? So don't feel ashamed at all of still being in the learner position. Don't feel ashamed of asking questions. Don't feel like you have to know it all. Be okay saying, I don't know what I don't know. And I haven't seen what I haven't seen. Would you mind walking me through this? Also, one point about job search and this important piece is finding and making sure the onboarding for your positions is really going to support you. I have precepted patients or students, and I've always said to them, if the onboarding for that job is not long enough or it's not going to support you, it's not going to give you a good foundation to do well, and it's just going to frustrate you and burn you out early on. So when you're interviewing physicians, you want to always ask them, have you worked with a PA before? What do your PAs do? What's their scope? Like, how is this going to impact me? And then what does the training look like? Like, what does it look like for me and you to talk? Because as a new grad, you still have to have a certain number of hours. I think each PA license is usually like this per state, where you're directly having monitored, like someone is like, I hate to say supervising because we're collaborative, but someone is actually like going over your notes with you. You have like a communication with your collaborating physician where you're able to talk about that for at least the first, I don't know, 120 hours is what I have in my head for how it was with Colorado. So that transition, plus being a mom, was actually pretty interesting. I threw into that mix moving states. So within 18 months of being a PA, I left the job I started with, started a new role, and then moved to California shortly thereafter. First off, I don't advise any of that. Let's just be very clear. Not something I would,
What do you
recommend.
mean? Don't move when you first become a PA and raise children?
I mean, it's really not for the faint at heart, praise God, but I think that what I did help myself with is I stayed organized. So even in the new role, even though I had experience in reproductive medicine, there's still a lot to learn because now I'm not a researcher, I'm the clinician. I'm helping you, I'm doing the procedures, I'm doing what needs to be done. But I will say the bigger night and day for me was the onboarding with this position was so much longer, was so much more handholding, and it felt so much better because then when they let me go, I was sailing and there have been minimal issues since. So I think that should be like
Well,
super stressed.
so such good advice too. And I think you have to ask, right? I think a lot of people make assumptions that they're just going to have some beautiful written onboarding plan for 6 months or a year. And a lot of places are
They
not like
don't.
that. And a lot of places don't have the resources. So ask. You mentioned talking to, the collaborating physicians. Talk to other people in your interview process. Ask to talk to the practice administrator. Ask to talk to the PAs and maybe the NPs or the nurses that work there. Get their opinion on what it's like for them and what does a day-to-day look like. I think a lot of, and I think there's different generations and different points along your career where you feel comfortable, right? And so you sit on that struggle of, I want to demonstrate that I know it all, but also don't. And when you work in a new specialty too, I think outline the topics that you want to cover, and you want to learn about to piecemeal it out, right? You can't learn everything in a week's time. And when you encounter patients at night, that's what I used to do. If I saw a new patient that had a new disease that I wanted to know more about at night, because it was so fresh, I went home and
And
looked
look
it
it
up,
up.
right? And I
You
used
look it up.
UpToDate and some other resources to say, I need to revisit that, or what was, the UpToDate protocol or medication, and
I
I
will
and
say,
ask and say, hey, can we talk about this? Can we talk about the patient?
And what's
Sure.
really nice is your collaborating physicians will appreciate, hey, I've researched this. I looked at this. Do you have any other insight? Like anything else? Have you seen this? What do you do?
Yes.
Because now you have their experiential learning plus what you've read, and you combine that with what you saw, and now you've just like accelerated your knowledge and understanding and how you approach something. So 100%.
Absolutely. Medicine's a team sport, right? So I can't tell you how many times I was like, hey, I need you to come see this patient. So whether it was a physician in the office or somebody else, I was like, I need you to take a look and put second set of eyes
100%.
here. Validate
I
what
will.
I'm saying. Yeah.
It's the validation. Like I know what I know, but like maybe you've seen this and I just happened. So can you just put your eyes on this for me real quick? Well, I was gonna say one other thing I did do that I like totally missed was in PA school. I went to PA school. COVID happened midway through PA school for me, so a lot of things that I wanted to do couldn't do for various reasons. One of those was really practicing IUD insertions, and I knew going to OB that I would need to do really well at that. So I Googled, because I'm type a program that sent me a pelvic model, and it was an online, like asynchronous course for a little bit. And then it was a synchronous of them having us demonstrate putting in an IUD with this pelvic model using a speculum and all of the things. So I paid for that. I forget who it was through. I probably have to find it and send the information to you. But they sent it to me. I got like CMEs for it. But then I was also able to practice and demonstrate that skill. And I still have all my practice IUDs, both, all of them from the major pharma that produced them, to be able to help support. And now I use those as my teaching for students when they come in. Like I have all of that. So I just like, advocated for what I needed, knew where my deficiencies were. I think that's another important part is know where your blind spots are. Know where there are things that you're like, I haven't seen this as much. I want to read up on it and then self-educate.
Yeah, such good advice. So, well, we're coming to the end of our time here. So tell me, what is maybe the one piece of advice that you'd give to a new PA as they enter the workforce?
It's going to be okay. Just literally tell yourself it's going to be okay. Like you're going to be nervous, Nelly. There are going to be a lot of things that the transition from PA student to PAC is that you are no longer Like you are the decision maker, like the medical decision, your differentials, all of that is you. And sometimes that can feel overwhelming, because you want to be so right and get it so perfect. At least that's my experience. And so I would just say it's going to be okay. And don't expect to build Rome in a day. Like it's going to take time. Like give yourself that time. Like I still have to remember, I've been in my position now for a while, but there's still things that I still need to brush up on. I'm always like, Rome wasn't built in a day. Like empires do not come overnight. Like you really have to like do your due diligence. But know that it's going to be okay. So I think that would be my biggest advice. Keep encouraging yourself, keep telling yourself those things, because in the world of medicine, as you mentioned, from how it was years ago to what it is now, it is a lot. Your patients are going through a lot, but the more you can give yourself that assurance and say it's going to be okay, when you step into a room, the patient's going to feel your calm instead of your anxiety, because patients will feel that. Your energy will go ahead of you. So if you're nervous about something before you enter that patient room or write that note or whatever you need to do, just take a deep breath and say, it's going to be okay, and it's only going to make me better. Like it's never a loss, always lessons, never losses.
Absolutely. Well, Natalie, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us. And it sounds like you are the queen of your empire. You are a super clinician, super mom, super leader, super friend. And it has been so fun chatting with you today. And
Thanks.
you know, I'm just so grateful for all that you've done and sharing with students. And it's an amazing time to be a PA, and you've given them so much insight. So
Thank you.
that is a wrap for this episode of Ready, Set, Practice, Insight for New PAs. We hope you found these insights helpful as you navigate the start of your PA career. Don't forget, PAs can claim your CME by visiting Learning Central. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Ready, Set, Practice.